असतो मा सद्गमया तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमया मृत्योर्मा मृतं गमया. Lead us from the unreal to the real. Lead us from darkness unto light. Lead us from death to immortality. Let us sit quietly for a few minutes and try to meditate in any way we please. Om Sthapakaya cha dharmasya sarvadharma swarupine avatar varishthaya Ramakrishnaya te namaha. I bow down to Sri Ramakrishna, who established religion, embodying in himself the reality of all religions, and being thus the foremost of the divine incarnations. This morning our subject is Surendranath Mitra, a devotee of Sri Ramakrishna. Sri Ramakrishna, as you know, was born in 1836 in a remote village in Calcutta, in Bengal, and passed away in 1886. So he lived for 50 years. And during these 50 years, he enacted his divine play, we can say, in three parts. The first part was his early life, which he spent in the rural atmosphere of his native village. Second part is the adult life, which he spent in Calcutta and then nearby Dakshineshwar temple. There he lived for the next 30 years. This was probably the most eventful phase of his life. During this phase, he practiced various superhuman spiritual disciplines, attained the ultimate spiritual realization, and then began to share the fruit of his sadhana with the humanity. And then the third and the final part of his life was enacted in the Kashipur garden house when he was sick with throat cancer. There he brought his divine play to a close by forming the future Ramakrishna order. So these are the three phases of his life. Once in a public meeting, one scholar was commenting on Sri Ramakrishna's life, and he was saying that, yes, Sri Ramakrishna formed this monastic order and this band of monks, but the monks who had already renounced everything for sake of God, they already kind of on their way, on their spiritual journey. And he was saying that Sri Ramakrishna actually came for the sake of the householder people who have to live in the world, have to face difficulties every day, and it is to teach them that the master came. And then after this, a very senior monk, Swami Gambhirananda, got up. It was his turn to speak. And he said, Sri Ramakrishna came neither for monks nor for householders. He came for anybody and everybody who sincerely wanted to seek God. So this morning we are talking about a devotee of Sri Ramakrishna, Surendranath Mitra. Indeed, people from all strata visited Sri Ramakrishna when he was ready to share his fruit of his sadhana with the humanity. There came the young, pure-hearted boys whom he trained with the highest ideal of renunciation, who would later completely renounce the world and be the conduit of his spiritual treasures and become monks and form part of the Ramakrishna order. There also came many, many sincere, pure-hearted devotees who sincerely wanted to seek God. And there also came some very unconventional people who were indifferent to religion to begin with, but their lives underwent remarkable transformation when they came in contact with Sri Ramakrishna. And it is said that there is no greatness in making a good person good, because that person is already good. But there is great credit in making a person who is not so good and transforming that person's life and turning it towards something good. And there we actually witness the great spiritual power of the divine incarnations. And there is there lies the difference between a divine incarnation like Sri Ramakrishna and an ordinary saint. Sri Ramakrishna himself has given many examples to illustrate the difference between an illumined soul and an avatar. For instance, he says in one place that an ordinary saint is like someone who can, let's say there is a rank growth covering a well or a water spout, and a person can clear up the rank growth and open up the spout. On the other hand, that is an example of an illumined soul. On the other hand, an avatar is like an engineer who can dig a well where there was no water source known, which means that an ordinary saint can open spiritual inclination in a person who was already quite good to begin with. But then it is the remarkable capacity of a great spiritual teacher like Sri Ramakrishna who can transform a person's life, almost like digging a well where there was no water. So Surendranath Mitra was a typical young man of his day. He was a carefree person, very liberal-minded, and very indifferent to religion. He was quite a handsome person and very well placed in his job. He worked for a British firm in Calcutta. He was kind of a bohemian, and he had a group of friends who was of not so good character. He would often drink and would also visit places of ill repute. He was married but had no children. When he came in contact with Sri Ramakrishna, he was 30 years old. So now, given Surendranath's character, he would do all these things, but still at the back of his mind, he had no mental peace. His conscience pricked him from time to time. So much so that, in spite of his affluence and proper job and everything and his group of friends, one time he even thought of taking his life. One time he was going through a road, and a Bhairabi, a tantric nun, happened to pass by, and we don't know why, but she made a comment while passing, "My son, God alone is true, everything else is false." And she went away. But that comment somehow made a deep impression on his mind. Meanwhile, he lived in a place where his neighbor was Ramchandra Datta, a devout person who was then visiting Sri Ramakrishna frequently and was a great devotee of him. And Ramchandra had often asked Surendra to come and visit Sri Ramakrishna with him. But Surendranath was absolutely indifferent. He often said that, "You like to visit this holy person, that is fine. Why do you want to drag me into this?" And he did not want to go. But Ramchandra persisted. And so finally his friend agreed, and then they went to visit Sri Ramakrishna one afternoon with two friends. And the attitude with which Surendranath visited the master was this. He said, okay, I will go, but if that holy man of yours is a fake, I shall twist his ears. Such was the attitude when he approached Sri Ramakrishna. And when he went there, he was still very determined to preserve his critical attitude. And he entered the room and he did not even greet Sri Ramakrishna in any manner. But he sat down. And then the master was talking to the devotees. He said, as they went into the room, the master was saying, why does a man behave like a young monkey and not like a kitten? Then he was giving the analogy that a monkey has to cling to its mother by his own efforts as she moves around. Because the monkey is trying to cling to the mother, he sometimes clings, sometimes he lets go. And when he lets go, it falls to the ground and gets badly hurt. On the other hand, the kitten just goes on mewing until its mother comes and picks it up by the scruff of its neck. So the kitten has no danger like the monkey because it doesn't try to do things on its own. It just depends on the mother. The mother carries the kitten from place to place. That is the difference between trying to do things for yourself and giving yourself up to the will of God. The master's words made a deep impression on Surendra, and this meeting turned out to be a turning point in his life. And we can well understand that probably those were not just the words that made the impression, it must have been the spiritual power that was behind those words. But anyhow, Surendra thought to himself at that point that yes, I behave like a young monkey. That is the source of all my troubles. From now on, I will try to rely on God and try to be satisfied with any condition that the Divine Mother puts me in. And he felt sort of a great relief and inner strength. And at the time of leaving, he actually respectfully bowed down to Sri Ramakrishna, although when he came in, he did not want to even greet him. Then on his way home, he admitted to his companions, ah, how this man turned the tables on me. It was he who twisted my ears. How could I have dreamed that there could be such a man? He read my innermost thoughts. And now at last I feel that my life has some meaning. From the very first meeting, Surendranath became extremely devoted to him and went to Dakshineshwar almost every Sunday. And I'll take a moment here to comment on his name. Now, those of us who read the Gospel, Surendranath is a very common name. It comes many times in the Gospel. So we see his reference on many occasions. The scenes are described, and in the list of people who are present, we see Surendra was present. Surendra's original name was actually Suresh Chandra, and the master called him Surendra. And in many places, you will see there is a footnote given or a comment given that Surendra was the disciple whose name was Suresh Chandra, but the master affectionately called him Surendra. So it's the same person. Anyhow, so he was going to Dakshineshwar almost every Sunday from then on. But although he got a glimpse into this new life and a transformation was taking place, but transformation doesn't happen altogether overnight. So naturally, he was still acting under his past samskaras, and he could not give up his old habits altogether. So he would still visit houses of ill fame from time to time. This is just a very human thing that was happening. And then he would do these things And after that, he would feel very ashamed of himself. And then he would stay away from the master just out of shame. And then other people reported this to Sri Ramakrishna. But it is amazing how the master was treating his disciple and trying to bring him near him. So he was completely unconcerned when people said these things about Surendra's behavior. And he said, Sri Ramakrishna said, oh yes, Surendra still has some desire for enjoyment. Let him enjoy them for a while longer. He will become pure soon enough. And again, these words of the master went back to Surendra, and that gave him great encouragement that the master has not given up on him. So he then went back to Dakshineshwar again. This happened several times. So one time like this, he went back to Dakshineshwar, but out of shame, he was a little hesitant to go and sit near the master. So he sat far in a corner and listened to the conversation. Sri Ramakrishna affectionately called him, why don't you come and sit near me? Why do you sit aloof, far away, like a thief? Then, in an ecstatic mood, the master said, well, when a man goes to a bad place, why doesn't he carry Divine Mother with him in his heart? If the Mother is with him, she would protect him from any evil action. Surendra was probably the only person in the room who understood the implication of that comment. Then the master continued. Now he said, a little manliness is necessary for everyone. And immediately in Surendra's mind, the thought played out that, yes, that is my problem, that manliness. Then immediately the master said, I don't mean manliness in a crude way. I mean the manliness of the great hero like Arjuna. So by the word manliness, he was talking about persistent self-effort and determination and grit to get over the shortcomings. So he gives the example of Arjuna and says, by manliness, I mean to be like Arjuna, to be able to stick to an ideal to the last breath of one's life. Surendra was afraid that the master might expose his faults before the group of devotees, but Sri Ramakrishna stopped there and said nothing further. But this advice helped Surendra a great deal to fight against his weaknesses. Surendra's love for the master grew steadily. He was devoted to Divine Mother Kali, and soon he set up a shrine to the mother in his room and started worshipping her with great devotion. Now, Surendra had another weakness, that was his drinking habit. Again, he could not give it up immediately. And the master knew that very well, about this weakness. And his friend Ramchandra Datta was concerned that if one of Sri Ramakrishna's own close devotees is a drunkard, what will people think of him? So he was insisting his friend to give up the drinking. And Surendra said, well, the master doesn't have any problem. If he thought this was a problem, he would certainly have said something to me. So one day they went to the master, and this is what I'm just reading from a gospel entry. This is what happened on that day. Surendra stood near Sri Ramakrishna. He was in the habit of drinking and often went to excess. This had worried the master greatly, but he had not asked Surendra so far to give up drinking altogether. But today he said, he gave kind of a solution to him. He said to him on this day, look here, Surendra, whenever you drink wine, offer it beforehand to the Divine Mother. see that your brain doesn't become clouded and that you don't reel. The more you think of the Divine Mother, the less you will like to drink. The Mother is the giver of the bliss of divine inebriation. Realizing her, one feels a natural bliss. Then the Master looked at Surendra and said, "You have had a drink, didn't you?" With these words, he went into Samadhi. It was dusk. Regaining partial consciousness, the Master sang a song to the Divine Mother. Now, this incident caused a transformation in Surendra's bad habit. The Master did not ask him to give up drinking altogether, but somehow he made him connect even that bad habit with God. Sri Ramakrishna has said it in other places that whatever you can connect somehow with God, that thing becomes transformed. So this is what exactly he advised this disciple. And it turns out that after this, Surendra could not drink like he used to in the past. He could not drink at parties. He could not drink with his friend. He would sometimes drink at home, but as the Master had advised, he would really offer it to the Divine Mother, and then he would actually get absorbed in meditation on Divine Mother. And that way, slowly, his habit was transformed. Now, Surendra was destined to play a great role in Sri Ramakrishna's life and divine mission. It is said that Sri Ramakrishna received a vision from the Divine Mother where he learned that there were going to be four people who would be the supplier of provisions for him. That those people were sent by divine providence. And this Surendra, who had a very well-paid job, was destined to be one of them. And Surendra started to make arrangements for the food and bedding for the devotees who was spending nights at Dakshineshwar to be with the Master and serve the Master. So in this way, indirectly, although Surendra did not serve the Master directly, but he was serving the devotees, and this way offering service to the Master. I will read to you just a little bit from one of the gospel entries, where we read how Sri Ramakrishna advised Surendra to use his money wisely and gave him some idea of how to serve and how to live in the world. So this is an entry from Sunday, February 22nd, 1885. Sri Ramakrishna cast an affectionate look on Surendra and began to give him advice. "Master," to Surendra, "come here every now and then. Totapuri used to say that a brass pot must be polished every day. Otherwise it gets tarnished. One should constantly live in the company of holy men. The renunciation of woman and gold is for sannyasins. It is not for you. Now and then you should go into solitude and call on God with a yearning heart. Your renunciation should be mental. Unless a devotee is of the heroic type, he cannot pay attention to both God and the world. King Janaka lived a householder's life only after attaining perfection through austerity and prayer. He fenced with two swords, as it were, the one of knowledge and the other of action." The Master continued to Surendra, "For you, as Chaitanya said, The disciplines to be practiced are kindness to all living beings, service to the devotees, and chanting the name of God. Why do I say all this to you? You work in a commercial environment, in a merchant's office. I say this to you because you have to perform all kinds of jobs there. You tell lies at the office. But then why do I accept food from you? Because you give your money in charity. You give away more than you earn. Your giving money away in charity is very good. The miser's wealth is spirited away, but the money of the charitable person is saved. He spends it for a righteous purpose. The devotees listened with great attention to Sri Ramakrishna's words. Then Surendra tells the master, I cannot meditate well. I repeat the Divine Mother's name now and then. Lying in bed, I repeat her name and fall asleep. The master says, that is enough. You remember the mother, don't you? Then he says, there are two kinds of yoga. Mano yoga, which is mental union with God, and karma yoga, the yoga of action. To perform pious acts such as worship, pilgrimage, service to living beings, that is karma yoga. The duties that Janaka performed are also karma yoga. The meditation and contemplation of the yogis is called mano yoga. In this way, Sri Ramakrishna made it firm on Surendra's mind, the way that was suitable for him to serve the devotees and maintain his work in the world. Surendra invited the master many times in his home. And in the gospel we read at least there are two very detailed accounts where he arranged for festivals at his home and invited many other devotees. And Surendra's Calcutta home gradually became one of Sri Ramakrishna's parlors, as he used to call it, where he would often meet the Calcutta devotees. And so the master really considered Surendra as one of his own. We even find that once the master came there, even unexpectedly, without anyone knowing, and Surendra was not even at home then, and the cab fare had to be paid, and he very guilelessly said that, ask the ladies of the house to pay the cab fare. They certainly know me. They know that Surendra visits me at Dakshineshwar. And everybody was very touched by his guileless remark. So this just shows that how close the master considered Surendra to be. And it is something to worth noting that it was in Surendra's Calcutta home that Swami Vivekananda first met Sri Ramakrishna. On one of the festivals that Surendra had arranged, there was supposed to be musical performance, and the artist who was supposed to sing for some reason couldn't make it. So Surendra was looking for someone to do devotional singing. And Surendra knew Swami Vivekananda, then Narendranath, through common friends. And so Narendranath was invited to perform devotional singing at that festival. And that is where he first met Sri Ramakrishna. And Surendranath is also credited to arranging Sri Ramakrishna's birthday festival for the first time. So around this time, the master's devotees were growing in number, and they wanted to celebrate master's birthday. And Surendranath came forward and took the initiative to celebrate the birthday for the first time in Dakshineshwar in 1881. And since then, the birthday celebration has continued. Now, You know, there exist three photographs of Sri Ramakrishna. It is indeed very rare to have actual photographs available of a divine incarnation or a mystic of the stature of Sri Ramakrishna. And Surendranath was responsible for one of those three photographs. And how it came about is quite interesting. Sri Ramakrishna took quite active interest in the things of the day. It is known that he went to the zoo, he went to a museum maintained by Asiatic Society. As we know, he went to visit Girish's theater many times. He went to visit the Calcutta Fort, the Fort William. Similarly, he once expressed interest in the technique of photography. So Surendranath offered to take him to a place where he could see how photographs are made. And we find this in the gospel. It was a Sunday, December 10, 1881. Sri Ramakrishna was visiting a devotee's home in Calcutta, Manomohan's house. He rested there a while and had some refreshments. Then Surendra took the master in a carriage to the studio of the Bengal photographer. It is not that Sri Ramakrishna was supposed to be photographed that day, but he just wanted to see how photography is done. At the studio, the art of photography was explained to him, and he was shown how glass coated with silver nitrate takes the image. As the master was being photographed, he went into samadhi. Sri Ramakrishna later on referred to the experience in the following words. "Master, with a smile, today I enjoyed very much the machine by which a man's picture is taken. One thing I noticed was the impression doesn't stay on a bare piece of glass, but the impression remains when the glass is stained with a black solution. In the same way, mere hearing of spiritual talk doesn't leave any impression. People forget it soon afterwards, but they can retain spiritual instruction if they are stained inside with earnestness and devotion." Sri Ramakrishna again used this knowledge of photography in another occasion. Here he says, "A man with a green bhakti cannot assimilate spiritual talk and instructions." He often used this kind of word like green bhakti, which he also calls unripe bhakti, giving an analogy to green fruit that is usually unripe, means preparatory devotion, which is like our devotion when we are trying to practice various disciplines and trying to grow in devotion. So a person with green bhakti cannot assimilate spiritual talk and instructions, but one with mature devotion can. The image that falls on a photographic plate covered with black film is retained. On the other hand, thousands of images may be reflected on a bare piece of glass, but not one of them is retained. As the object moves away, the glass becomes the same as it was before. One cannot assimilate spiritual instruction unless one has developed some love of God. So we see that Sri Ramakrishna had tremendous power of observation, and his mind was tuned such that anything and everything reminded him of the divine or spiritual life. So this is how, when he saw the photographic technique, this is what came to his mind. And regarding his photograph being taken, it is speculated that Surendra must have alerted the photographer in advance that if there is an opportune moment, the photograph should be taken. So when the photographic technique was being explained to the master, and when the spiritual implication of it came to his mind soared high, and he went into samadhi, became unconscious of the outer environment, and at that point the photograph was taken. So we are very grateful that because of this circumstance, we have one photograph of Sri Ramakrishna. And later on, shortly after this, this photograph was also converted into a painting, which Surendranath actually commissioned. So that figure of Sri Ramakrishna's was put into a painting depicting harmony of religions. And three devotees actually conceived of the idea of the painting, and there we see this whole picture of the harmony of religions, where there is a Christian church, a Hindu temple, and a mosque, and people are standing in front of it. They are devotees of different sects of Hinduism. Then there is a Christian person, a Muslim person, and a Buddhist person. Christ is depicted as dancing with Sri Chaitanya, almost holding hands. Sri Ramakrishna is standing next to Keshav Sen on one side and pointing to him this whole scene of harmony of religions. And Sri Ramakrishna actually saw the original painting and he appreciated it. He also saw a copy of the painting, and we even find it in the gospel where it was being shown to him and he said, yes, this painting was done for Surendra. And one devotee points out, you too are in this picture. And Sri Ramakrishna says, smiling, yes, it contains everything. This is the ideal of modern times. That means the harmony of religions is the ideal of modern times. So, now, soon Sri Ramakrishna became sick and he was moved to Shyamapukur house for treatment. And Surendra continued to serve the master by providing some financial help in this place also. Then he was, Sri Ramakrishna's condition grew worse. And as we know, he was then moved to the Kosipur Garden House for further treatment. Now again, the master received service from Surendra. When the garden house was rented, the rent was quite high. It was 80 rupees a month, quite a large sum for those days. And Sri Ramakrishna was concerned that most of the devotees did not have the means to pay for it. So one day he called Surendra and said that, look, these devotees are mostly poor clerks and have large families to maintain their own. So how can they pay the high rent of the garden house? Please bear the whole of it yourself. Surendra gladly agreed. And moreover, he contributed to some of the other expenses as well during Sri Ramakrishna's last days. So this was a wonderful service that Sri Ramakrishna actually received and accepted, we should say, from him. And so I will not go into details because for lack of time. Sri Ramakrishna passed away in the August 16, 1886 at Kosipur Garden House. There was one more important contribution that Surendranath did. When Sri Ramakrishna passed away in 1886, within 2 weeks, the lease of the Kosipur Garden House was about to expire. And this was a very critical time for the disciples that Sri Ramakrishna brought together for the sake of his mission. It is unbelievable now to think what tremendous difficulty that they underwent at that time. There was no place for them to live together. They were living together and serving the master during his last days. But when he left, there were actually three members who were living there at that time who had already renounced and were ready to stay at the monastery. But there was no monastery to begin with, no place. And some of the other disciples, they were serving the master, but when he passed away, they had to go back to their home because they had not formally renounced. And also they did not get approval from their family. So under this condition, they were passing their days. The Kaushikpur garden house was vacated, and many of the disciples went back to their home. On the other hand, the householder disciples also very much missed the holy company that they had from the master and these all-renouncing monks. At this time, one day when Surendranath was meditating in the shrine in the evening after his office duties, he had some kind of a vision from Sri Ramakrishna, where he felt the master was telling him that, "What are you doing here? My boys are roaming about without a place to live. Attend to that before anything else." So he immediately went to Swami Vivekananda and told him about this experience. And he said that, "Brothers, where will you go?" He said this to Swami Vivekananda immediately. "Let us rent a house. You will live there and make it our master's shrine, and we householders shall come there for consolation. How can we pass all our days and nights with our family in the world? I used to spend a sum of money for the master at Kaushikpur, so I shall gladly give it now for your expenses." And Swamiji immediately said that he also was thinking something along this line. He also said that he was concerned that where will all these boys go and how can they stay together if there is no place for them to stay. So accordingly, Surendra rented a house for them at Baranagar. It was a completely dilapidated house. Nevertheless, it was a house. And this place gradually became the first monastery of the Ramakrishna order. The exact founding date was 19th October, just barely 2 months after passing of Sri Ramakrishna. And at this point, Swami Vivekananda actually pleaded with all the young brother disciples to not to forget the master's ideal and to come and join the monastery. And one by one, they severed connections with their family and joined the Baranagar monastery. For the first few months, Surendra contributed 30 rupees a month. And as more and more people started to join, his contribution increased. And it was to cover the rent of the house and some other expenses of the monks. And this he did for 4 years. But let us also not forget the fact that this house means really it was barely a house, but nevertheless the rent had to be paid. And they found this house at this low rent because it was, number one, it was dilapidated, and also it belonged to some landlord in the past. And apparently there had been some murders in the house. So there were some spooky events known to be happening. So people thought it was a haunted house. Nobody wanted to rent it. So it was available for a very low rent. And this is what the monks took. And Surendra paid for it. And there are some descriptions of the very early days of the Baranagar Mott, how the building was. You can read the descriptions. It says there were 2 to 3 inches of dust on the floor. The windows were broken. There were the beams on the ceiling. In many places, they were broken and falling apart and supported by bamboo shafts. And for bedding, the monks had barely mat. And for covering, they had some threadbare blankets, which were more like fishnets than a sheet. So this was the condition in which they lived. They didn't have pillows. They used, literally, they used bricks sometimes to support their head. So, but when Surendranath would find out that something was lacking, of course, these monks were living with the highest ideal of renunciation. They would never ask for anything. But when Surendranath would find out that some bare necessity was lacking, he would make sure to supply it to them. And this he did for 4 years, from 1886 to 1890. He passed away at the age of 40 within 4 years. And Aim, the recorder of the gospel, writes in the gospel, Surendra was indeed a blessed soul. It was he who laid the foundation of the great order later associated with Sri Ramakrishna's name. His devotion and sacrifice made it possible for those earnest souls to renounce the world for the realization of God. Through him, Sri Ramakrishna made it possible for them to live in the world as embodiments of his teaching, the renunciation of woman and gold, and the realization of God. These young monks lived at the mott like orphan boys. Sometimes they would not have the money to pay their house rent. Sometimes they would have no food in the monastery. Surendra would come and settle all these things. He was like the big brother of the monks. Later on, when they thought of his genuine love, the members of this first mott shed tears of gratitude. Truly, the disciples of the master never forgot what Surendra did. Swami Vivekananda told his disciple, Sarachandra Chakravarti, "You have doubtless heard Surendra's name. He was in a way the founder of this mott. It was he who used to bear all the expenses of the Baranagar mott. It was this Surendranath Mitra who used to think of us most in those days. His devotion and faith have no parallel." Swami Akhandananda, another disciple, reminisced, "Thereafter, it was the advice and insistence of the great devotee Surendranath Mitra that led to the founding of the Baranagar mott." Latu Maharaj, Swami Adbhutananda, also said, "Swamiji would often say, whatever mott you see is owing to the efforts of Surendranath Mitra." So this was in nutshell some glimpses of this devotee's life. He did not live long. He died at the age of 40 in 1890. When he was seriously ill, some of the monks went to see him. And at that time, he had offered to give them 500 rupees to build a shrine for Sri Ramakrishna. But the monks told him, "Wait until your health is better. Later on, we shall talk about it." But Surendra never recovered. Before his death, however, he set aside 1,000 rupees to be used for purchasing a land near the Ganga for a future monastery dedicated to Sri Ramakrishna. The master's disciples had great love for Surendra, so they decided to keep this money for some special purpose. So when the monastery indeed was built on the bank of the Ganges, instead of using it to purchase the land, they used this money to make the marble flooring of the master's shrine where Sri Ramakrishna was installed. Not the present temple, but the original shrine, the so-called old temple. And that marble flooring is still there today.